WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. There's a condition sometimes called environmental illness or 20th century disease that leaves a person allergic to most common chemicals in the environment, from car exhausts to hairsprays. The allergic reactions range from rashes to severe wheezing and choking. My guest Todd Haynes wrote and directed the new film Safe, which stars Julianne Moore as an affluent suburban homemaker who develops the symptoms of environmental illness and seeks help, first through her doctors, then at a New Age retreat. Haynes' previous film, Poison, put him at the center of the controversy over federal funding of the arts. Jesse Helms condemned the NEA for giving partial funding to Poison, which dealt with homosexuality. Haynes says he wouldn't apply it to the NEA for a grant again. Before we talk, here's a scene from Safe. Julianne Moore has gone to a self-help group for people with environmental illness, even though her husband suspects her problem is really psychological. As you can hear in the scene, she's very insecure and unsure of herself.
So how'd it go?
What?
Your thing, this morning. What was it on?
Well, it was just this thing on getting sick on fumes and bug sprays and stuff.
You mean on, like, pollution?
More about people who get sick from chemicals and what it does to you.
Who told you to go to this?
No, I just... At the health club, I saw a flyer.
So, you think this is what's made you, why you've been sick? Because of bug spray?
No, I just... I don't know why.
Todd Haynes, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you, Terry.
Now, one of the things you're doing in Safe is kind of rewriting the genre of the illness movie.
Yeah.
What are some of the conventions of the genre that you intentionally avoided or subverted?
I guess in a funny way, the film really follows them pretty directly in terms of sort of structure, because often what happens in these TV disease movies is that you're there to basically learn about an illness, like teach me about cancer, and for a while it's almost like informational. But there's a point in all of those films that the emphasis shifts to the character, the subject, usually a woman, who then it's sort of her responsibility almost as a character in the story to learn some truth about her illness, to see the world in a new way, and to find herself almost as a result of her experience with disease, because the diseases, you know, differ from film to film. Sometimes you survive them, sometimes they don't. So the closure of these films is always an emotional one or a personal one. And Safe takes that structure pretty verbatim, and instead it just slowly begins to undermine all of the easy answers about a sort of personal understanding of illness in the world, and you're left with a very uncertain closure. Despite the fact that she's done everything that a woman would do in a TV movie, you just see a lot more about the sort of personal tolls that these kinds of healing strategies take on the individual.
I think most movies center around somebody who is charismatic. Whether the person is a good person or a bad person, the important thing in a movie is that they have charisma.
Right.
And you've built your movie around a woman who is so timid. She is afraid of the sound of her own voice. I mean, she could barely utter a word in public.
Yeah.
I think that's a very difficult and even daring thing to do, to build a movie around somebody who doesn't have charisma.
Right. No, it's true. It was like a challenge to myself as a filmmaker to try to find, instead of the sort of hero worship you know, idea, or the ego ideal that we look for in most films. This is really like about the most fragile side of ourselves, Carol White. But I think she's in all of us in some capacity. And most movies are all about, you know, they sort of affirm identity and sort of tell you that if you kind of do these things and assert yourself in these ways, everything will come to you. Even someone as passive as Forrest Gump, his identity is affirmed at the end of that movie. A British friend of mine said recently that Safe is really the true Forrest Gump because it tells you what really happens to vulnerable people in this culture, you know? No, they're not affirmed at all.
When you went to New Age retreats to do research for your film, what were some of the things that you saw that made you think, I could see this being really helpful? And other things that you saw that struck you as either phony or maybe even harmful or delusional?
One of the New Age centers that I visited was informative because I saw that it has a lot of really, that its origins are in things that I find very useful and important, from hippie philosophy to Eastern tradition and yoga and relaxation and healthy diet. And I have no qualms or questions about the importance of our internal life in the way that we feel healthy and happy as people. I guess the thing that I immediately kind of felt this instinctive reaction against is how hyper-organized these places are and ultimately controlling the way they run, basically, is organizations and make money and instruct people in a very specific doctrine about what health is and what wellness is. I think they perpetrate this idea that we have access to complete and total balance and holistic peace within ourselves, and that if only we could get to it, we'd be okay. That the society has no effect on that wholeness within us, and if we just know how to find it, we'll be okay, and eventually the society will be okay as well. That is where I lose my patience with it and feel that it's ultimately this apolitical denial of the world, and that there's too much stock given to this idea of the transcendent self to solve all the world's problems.
Let me play the opening speech that you wrote for Peter, who's the leader of the New Age retreat for people with environmental illness.
All right, if you'd all close your eyes and pass your valuables to the front. No, no, come on. Not really. Okay. So we're feeling good, huh? We're feeling warmth. We can look into each other's eyes and actually see rejuvenation and personal transformation happening. Why? Because we've left the judgmental behind. And with it, the shaming condition that kept us locked up in all the pain. But what I want to share with you tonight, what I want to give you tonight, is an image to reflect on. An image of a world outside as positive and as free as the world we've created here. Because when you look out on the world from a place of love and a place of forgiveness, what you are seeing outside is a reflection of what you feel within.
The leader of this environmental New Age retreat, you have him being a chemically sensitive person with AIDS.
Yes, yes.
Why does he have AIDS?
Well, I one of the main things that drew me to these very issues was my awareness of the predominance of people with AIDS in the 80s, particularly gay men, who were drawn to a lot of these New Age thinkers and these recovery treatments. And it was sort of with a sort of attempt to understand them that I set out to explore this theme in the film. Really not an attempt to indict them or add more blame to them, to their situations, but really to try to keep an open mind about it. So in a way, Peter represents that particular strain. And I also have to admit that it's a little bit of a... trick. I think people reading the audience, particularly the liberal viewer of this film, will be constantly looking for clues like this in the story. Like, okay, here's a person of color who's one of the main people at Renwood. This has got to be a good place. Here's a person with AIDS who is gay, you know, or possibly gay. It's a gay filmmaker. He's got to be verifiable as a character, and so it's a little tricky, maybe even a little nasty on my part as a filmmaker to sort of plant these red herrings in the film, because I think it does complicate your relationship to him considerably.
My guest is Todd Haynes. He wrote and directed the new film Safe. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. Todd Haynes is my guest. He wrote and directed the new film Safe. It seems to me you use the language of science fiction a lot in this film. You use the language to create the sense of dread and an unnamed fear. For instance, the first scene in which Julianne Moore, who plays Carol, gets this terrible toxic reaction is when she's on the highway and she's driving behind a truck, and the truck is spewing out a lot of exhaust fumes that make her choke. This scene actually reminded me of The Incredible Shrinking Man.
That's right. I remember that scene where that weird, like, sparkly dust passes over him. Is that what you're thinking?
Exactly. Yeah. He's, like, lying on a boat, I think it is, and this, like, mist covers him over, and ever since he's enveloped by that mist, every day he shrinks a little bit more. And that's the science fiction version of what you're doing in this film. In this film, it's just toxic fumes, and she chokes a lot, and it's terrible for her.
Right. It's like the science fiction of our daily lives.
Exactly.
But it's true. When I was writing the script at some point in the pre-production period, I looked at 2001 again and hadn't really expected it to be pertinent to Safe at all. But the style of that film and its absolutely controlling sense of a world with no trace of human flaw or mess or any human trace whatsoever was like the perfect metaphor for Los Angeles, the kind of Los Angeles that I wanted to depict in Safe. So stylistically, it became a really influential work to look at. And so you'll see in Safe like these long, cold, sort of antiseptic shots and this very controlled camera and lighting. And it was certainly a trick to pull that off, even slightly for the budget that we had.
You know, something else that really reminded me of science fiction in your film, all of the mainstream doctors in this movie are very disbelieving of her problems. They figure she should go see a psychiatrist.
Right.
But it reminded me, you know, in your typical science fiction film, the teenagers have seen the blob or the teenagers have seen the spacecraft and the cops don't believe them.
Right.
And the parents don't believe them and the scientists don't believe them. And in this case, you know, the doctors don't believe her.
Yeah, that's so common to people's experience with this particular illness, and I think even more so with women in general. I was certainly thinking of the history of female diseases from hysteria onward and the ways in which medical establishments and society in general completely mistrusts and holds suspect women more often than men. Of course, when it was like the Gulf War syndrome and it was men serving the country, then all of a sudden these strange physical reactions that people were getting, probably to an exposure to chemicals, was taken seriously and financed for the first time.
I want to ask you about the sound in the film. You know, the way it's shot, you talked about 2001, there really is this sense of emptiness and a sense of, like, everybody seems to be in the middle of nowhere or no place in particular. But the sound really adds to that. There's this kind of hollowness as if everybody's in this really large room all the time, this big empty room. And then often there's like sounds creeping in. You don't quite know what they are from another room. You know, maybe it's a radio. Maybe it's like an appliance or a vacuum cleaner in another room.
Right.
Or just like this vague hum, like a 60-cycle hum or a plane flying overhead. But that it all kind of adds to that sense of like emptiness. And I guess I'd like you to tell us a little bit about what you did with the soundtrack, with that kind of background noise?
It was something that was actually designated in the script from the beginning and even specified, you know, what would be coming out of the radio and what would be coming out of the television set, less so than you actually experience it in the film, I think, that specifically. But we kind of wanted this feeling that the information was as much of a contaminant as the chemicals in general, but also that it only reemphasizes her vacuum that she lives in, because it's not news of the world that seems to touch her or that she really seems to hear, that we even seem to really hear. We just know that somewhere out there a world is sort of buzzing, you know, and it's seeping underneath her doorways and through her carpets into her body. But that isolation and that vacuum is something that you later see at Renwood in a much more dramatic visual statement in the world she ultimately ends up in is based on excluding the world and excluding those signs of danger and crisis.
Did you get any symptoms while making the movie? Did you get any rashes or find yourself mysteriously wheezing?
Oh, God. I've been you know, paranoid about it since researching the film. And most people who were involved in the project were coming up with, you know, unbelievable stories, real stories in their lives of just the most bizarre reactions to chemicals or to the world itself. And yeah, I was working on the film. We had a little apartment in Hollywood. We were renting, Christine Vachon, Lauren Zelaznik, the producers, and myself. And I was writing during the day there, and I would get these intense headaches that would not go away. And I thought I was going nuts, you know. And then we found out that there was literally a gas leak in the kitchen, and I was responding to it, you know. So yeah, you become a sort of human Geiger counter.
What direction do you want to head in now as a filmmaker? And I mean that both, you know, financially, do you want to make bigger budget films? And also, you know, what kind of stories do you think you want to tell?
I'm researching a film right now about the glitter rock era of the early 1970s. And it already threatens to be a very different kind of film for me, because it's actually about a period that I love. It's sort of like, oh my God, a film with pleasure and joy and sort of a good example or something to look at our current world in relation to. But I think practically I need to figure out a way to make films that have a little bit more reasonable budget. Safe was really, really hard to make at the budget that we set out to make it for, and it was really the only budget that we could get. You know, we couldn't get any more than $1 million to make this film, and so we tried to make it for $1 million, and it nearly broke us, you know. And I'd like to figure out how to sort of learn how to take care of myself and the producers and the people who work on the film a little bit more reasonably in the future.
Todd Haynes, he wrote and directed the new film Safe. This is Fresh Air.